It's the Two Time Labs podcast, episode number 63, Live Lab number 4.
Finding inspiring, fresh ideas in time-based productivity is like searching for a needle in a haystack. Join Francis Wade as he works with a special guest at Two Time Labs in each episode to create something brand new. A product the world has never seen in a way that keeps you engaged and also challenges your thinking. If you are a productivity nut, a person searching for new ways to improve your time management, or one of the busiest people you know, well, this is the podcast for you. There's nothing else like it. Stay tuned, the latest episode from Two Time Labs is about to start.
Hi, this is Francis Wade, and welcome to Live Lab number 4, the latest episode of the Two Time Labs podcast. Today I'm welcoming Garrick Van Buren, and during his visit to the lab, we talked about one topic, meetings. But it was more than just a rant about how bad they are and how they could be improved. But this episode actually came out quite differently than originally envisioned. First of all, it was recorded 2 whole years ago. The idea of doing a live lab didn't even exist back then. Second, it suffered when a huge chunk of the recording turned out to be silent. A technical glitch. Some 30 minutes were lost as a result. Finally, when it was recorded, there was no intent to publish an interactive alongside the episode. But in keeping with the other episodes in the series, I felt it needed that extra bonus content. So over the period of about a year, I actually created a branched learning simulation on meetings, which is being released with this episode. If you play the simulation, you will hear some of the ideas that we discussed being echoed in the learning content. So by way of introduction, Garrick is an author and a consultant who partners with leadership in companies of all sizes in the technology, professional services, media, and nonprofit sectors to improve their offerings through calm and deliberateness. He's the author of Rebuilding Block, How the Game of Cub Put My Life Back Together. So listen in as we talk about the extraordinary power calendar technology and social norms give to people who call meetings and the impact that has on productivity. Stay tuned.
So you said
you're asking about suboptimals. And
yes, you were saying that this is the few overcommitting the many.
Right, the few who have the technology in their hands to ruin the productivity of the many.
Yes.
So I could mess up everyone's schedule by. It's amazing, you know. Someone at the right level can ruin a week by scheduling enough meetings with enough of the most productive people, tie them up in useless conversations, or put them in useless training. For example, you know, there's the technology allows us to blow hours and hours of people's time. Just with a few keystrokes.
Yes, and I don't know that in all cultures, this goes back to the unclear expectations, I don't know in all cultures what the feedback loop is to persistent unacceptance of meeting requests. Right. What is the response, the reaction, if I just decline everything?
Right. Because it kind of, at least in the mind of the person sending it, it does kind of add up.
Yes. Yes, exactly. You know, I'm
there's this guy who's always turning down my meetings. He never shows up.
Right. Mm. Why am I not valuable?
Why am I dirt?
Yes.
Why doesn't he want to come to my meetings? And he did come to my meetings. I need to invite more important people, so it forces him to show up.
Yeah, love it. I love it. The other thing that comes to mind is I'm a big believer in aligning your schedule with your energy throughout the day.
Okay, yes.
And to me, suboptimal also falls under that. Like putting a commitment where I have to think hard or one where I need to navigate the implications and putting it at the end of the day or putting it right before lunch is to me very suboptimal in that I'm not going to be in the best position to be able to think through those things or be able to provide a substantial contribution,
right.
Knowing that I probably, those are the 2 points of my day where I'm usually the most mentally spent already and have those time. I was already into the solutioning, but I'm just saying that I usually block that time off with really small, minor, low brain power requirement commitments.
Right. So there's no accounting for my anything.
Yes. Only thing I'm accounting for is, do you have this slot of time available in your Outlook calendar?
Yeah. Right, and that question is going to take us into the next section in just a minute, because time available is a loaded question.
Totally.
It's one of those simple sounding but evil questions that. But anyway, we'll get to it in just a minute. But I had one more symptom I wanted to throw in that I picked up from a McKinsey article, funnily enough. So they're recommending to their clients after they do their strategy sessions, pay the very big dollars.
Mm-hmm.
That to actually implement the strategy, which is where most companies fall flat, is that they book time for people in people's calendars, executives' calendars, to work on strategy. Because inevitably what happens is that, with a regular raft of meetings of a regular nature, when an executive leaves a strategy retreat and goes back into his or her everyday activities, that their calendar doesn't look as if it was arranged at the strategy retreat. It looks like the calendar that pre-existed
yes.
the strategy.
Yes.
So they, in other words, they just keep on doing what they were doing before.
Right. They need to make a deliberate effort to change inertia.
Exactly. And if they're not used to the idea of scheduling activity in their calendar to, for example, think about strategy. It won't happen, because if that's left as a mental commitment, which most often it is, I suspect, as opposed to a scheduled commitment.
Right.
Because most people are using their calendar like an appointment calendar.
Yes.
Their commitments don't make it into the calendar unless they happen to coincide with a meeting.
And I want to be specific on this. It's
yes.
Things are appointments, or people are far more comfortable to keep a commitment with another person than they are to themselves.
Yes, like a date versus going to the gym.
Yes, precisely, exactly.
Right. It's a human tendency.
Mm-hmm.
However, on the day after the strategy retreat, you need to forcibly go into your schedule with a hammer and tongs or a knife and scalpel or whatever your tool of choice might be.
Yes.
And carve away, do wreckage to the old schedule so that you can make room for the new, right?
Yes.
So this article recommended, some companies are apparently doing this, is that they would have the executive secretary or executive admin assistant to the president or whoever it is, someone with enough clout, actually book time in everyone's calendar and have what's called a meetingless meeting. So I gave it that name because it was such a brilliant idea that I had to dub it something. And
yes.
I call it a meetingless meeting. And I wrote an article about it, and I can put it in the show notes.
Great.
But it's just an idea that she's going to book out, let's say, 10 to 12 every Monday morning in perpetuity for the next year.
Yes.
For every single person in the executive team.
Mm-hmm.
And they're going to They're actually not meeting together.
Mm-hmm.
She doesn't trust them to work on the strategy. So she is forcibly chaining them to their desks, basically, to work on strategy. That way, no one has an excuse at the end of the month to say, "Oh man, I haven't had a free hour to work on the new strategy."
Yes.
She books it for them because they are so unreliable. What do you think of the idea?
I do that.
Oh, you're wicked.
I have a standing 90-minute commitment on my calendar on Monday morning. It's either from 9 to 10:30 or from 8:30 to 10. I don't remember exactly right now, but it's something like that. And it is indefinitely repeating.
But this is you for you, or do you do it for others?
It's called strategic thinking.
Okay. So you have the presence of mind to do it for you.
The first thing I did when I was reacquainted with Outlook was to block that and a corresponding one at 3:30 on Friday that is weekly preview. And both of them are repeating weekly indefinitely.
Right.
I can't stop it. Those things are going to be there. Right. I can't do anything about them. They're locked in place.
Right. And I have recurring appointments like that. No, if you had colleagues, though.
Right.
So if you had partners, would you have the chutzpah to go in and do what this McKinsey article said, which is block time, and then when the time comes, say it's your time to work on the following task
on your own? That is super interesting. There are a couple of colleagues that I could do, I feel like would be open to playing around with that idea.
I can't imagine. Unless the team were very disciplined on its own. So unless they were all like you and they all booked strategic time, if you went into their calendar a week from now and saw that they had, you know, gone into their calendars the week after the retreat with a hammer and tongs and my God, their schedules are now aligned with the strategy.
Yeah.
If they were that good, then they could be trusted. But I have a suspicion, right?
Oh, well, and it's still a transition, right? In my experience working with people on this exact problem, and when early on for me, this is what happened, is I would block it off. I would block it off for this purpose. This is the time for me to think about these problems. And for the first few rounds, I just wouldn't. I would use it as that time where I cleaned up some other things. I would use that time to clean up my office. I would use that time to basically whatever my brain told me to do.
Yes.
And
I can relate.
And it's the same thing that I've heard from other people who have recommended this this to as well. The first few times, they have a hard time actually doing that because having another person on the other side of the table is a bit of accountability. And to have a commitment or have an appointment or a commitment on your calendar and there's not another person there to hold you accountable to be there at that time and do that thing. It takes some training within yourself to be able to hold yourself to that thing.
Overcome the inner resistance.
Exactly. And to say, no, I'm worth it, and if I want to achieve my goals and I want to do these things, I want to do them the right way and think clearly, I need to do this thing now that I told, that past me said I would do.
Yes. No, to be honest, though, the article that I read, it didn't rely on that level of personal discipline at all. The impression I got was that this is like the secretary who is they're usually pretty bossy, right?
She
would call you. She would ask you to account for what are you doing right now? She may even come around to your office.
Yeah.
And knock on the door just to see what the heck you're up to.
And
are you working on the strategy the way you're supposed to be?
There is some level of accountability that is valuable. And if it needs to start with a person being that level of accountability, great. long term, I've found the benefit of the clearer thinking and the more clear direction, and
yes,
that is to me a far greater level of accountability to say, oh, I now have a better idea. I feel more prepared about what I'm going to do next, and
right.
I've set aside this time to solve those overarching problems and to think about those overarching problems. Like that benefit is a seductive level, is accountability at a more seductive level.
Right. No, the next level of accountability that the article brought up is the idea of time budgeting.
So
they argued that on a grander scale, not the hour by hour, but more like a year to year scale, companies, most executives can tell you what their budget is for every single activity and how much they've consumed and how much is left and what their budget should be for next year and what their variances are. So they're used to the world of financial budgeting.
Right.
But time budgeting is, the article says, a bit of a joke. But what this company, same company, tried to do was to implement a time budget for each new strategic activity. So they would say, okay, each person needs to spend these 2 hours at the minimum on this particular piece of strategic action or outcome.
Yes.
And, of course, to hold the accountability, put the accountability in that you described, the admin assistant from hell would follow up and she would measure it as best as she could to see whether or not you actually spent the hours. And then she'd do a report that says, here's how we're doing in terms of our time budget for these strategic items.
Right. I have a close friend that has recreated this admin assistant that you speak of in software.
Tell us.
He had created a time budget for himself. He's a CTO of a publicly traded company. He had created a time budget for himself on all of his professional commitments, and he puts everything in his calendar and has a report run on a monthly basis that measures how much where he falls in reality against his ideal budget. And he was telling me the other day that he's run a few of these reports now and realized that he is over on some things that he doesn't want to be, like he's budgeted far less for, and some of these things that he has budgeted something for have nothing against them. Which means
that's pretty rigorous.
Which means that he's like, so now I need to go through, and just like you would with a financial budget, and say, okay, which of these things that I've said aren't valuable to me am I going to let go of? The point is that from this report, he was able to see that he is overspending on some commitments that he's already said are not valuable to him, and therefore not making any progress on these other commitments that he said are valuable to him. And so just like when you're tracking against a financial budget, you have to have that hard conversation with yourself about saying, which of these things that I've declared as low value will I have to disregard so I can move energy and time and progress onto these things that I've already declared are higher value and I haven't done anything about?
Are you someone who uses time blocking? You know, it's a technique where you put your tasks in your calendar, also known as time boxing, calendar blocking, or time batching. Well, the good news is that I'll be hosting the Time Blocking Summit from March 5th to 7th, 2020, and you're invited. We'll have over 25 experts on topics specially chosen people who use this approach. They are some of the most ambitious people you can find, which is why they are short of spare time and must be very intentional. If you are someone who has ever tried time blocking or someone who is using the technique every day, this is a don't miss event. www.timeblockingsummit.info. See you there.
Yes, now if Outlook could even help us in any shape or form to gather those numbers, if it could even tell you how many, what percentage of your weeks is booked in meetings.
Right.
If it could do anything like that, it could be useful in with respect to what we're talking about.
For sure.
But I imagine the organization that actually, and if it's staffed with people like the guy you just mentioned who budgets his time and tracks the overages and the underages, if the person is actually doing that, and there are a few people who are doing it in a company, that's a far cry from the droids that we're talking about in the more average company who are just going to meetings because someone called a meeting request.
Yes. Yes.
We're at two opposite ends of the spectrum, I suspect.
You know, it occurred to me that what we're talking about is changing our behavior from a thing that was scarce to a thing that is plentiful, right?
Say some more.
Well, we have organizational, perhaps we have organizational behaviors that are based on a time when meetings, face-to-face conversations, were scarce. And
so in other words, the software is sort of geared to an appointment calendar mindset where you have maybe two appointments, three appointments for a week.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. This always reminds me of those paper planners that have one small 2-inch by 2-inch box for each day. Like I can't put everything I need to remember into that box. And yet now we have a plethora, a surplus perhaps of commitments, of meeting requests, and the tools and the culture have not caught up to this world where they are constant.
Right. So there's a bit of a scaling problem.
Yes. Exactly. Our enthusiasm for these conversations has now surpassed our ability to manage them with any level of, without losing productivity on the other side.
But maybe this is a good time to transition into our third sort of topic about the software and its design, because you introduced the notion of the two sort of extremes. The extreme where there are people there who are time budgeting and they're watching their time and they're looking at overage and underage. Is that a word?
I think
overtime
it is.
Overtime and undertime. Great. And they are responding accordingly, so there's some feedback mechanism. As opposed to the company at the other end of the spectrum where it's just being responsive to mail. So Outlook in its design allows you to perform awfully at the worst, the bad end of the spectrum.
Yes.
And it offers you, am I right? It offers you nothing to move to the other end of the spectrum where you're as efficient as you described. Is that an accurate?
I think that is. There is no gentle nudging towards more refined and constructive use of this tool. Like all of that obligation is put on the organization itself, and which could be counter to how Outlook is constructed. Yes.
So you're totally left to the vagaries of the culture.
Yes. Absolutely. Yeah. And so there's that tension of, oh, well, Microsoft or whoever the calendar provider is, like, they must be an expert in how this work gets done. So we will secede to them when, in fact, it may be a poor match for how work gets done in this culture. And therefore, this culture needs to apply pressure against how that software is used. With no ability to with little ability to actually influence its design.
Right, right. So one built-in aspect that we've mentioned is that it's modeled after an appointment calendar, mm-hmm. right? It's not made for appointments with yourself.
Yes.
That's not the what? What appointment with yourself?
Yes, it's not obvious that it should be used for blocking off the time to actually do the work that you committed to doing.
So which means that the default behavior. So if you're a young whippersnapper joining a company, mm-hmm. and they're saying, "Oh, you can use Outlook if you want, or you could use your diary." You probably start, you know, have a little diary. You write.
Yeah.
Well, in our day, when you and I were entering the corporate world,
yes,
we probably had a, you know, all those black diaries of day run or daytime or something. We entered our meetings as appointments, right?
Yes.
Now we picked up Outlook and we used it the same way.
Mm-hmm.
And then we got more busy and more smart and started to generate a whole lot more commitments than just meeting commitments.
Yes.
And then we started to use Outlook to design or non-meeting hours.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's you and I.
Yeah, and I think if there's one small thing that people can take away from this is there's some amount of time that you require to prepare for whatever that appointment is that's on your Outlook. So I think the smallest thing to get started in getting this tool to work for you better is to look at that commitment and say, what time am I blocking? What time do I need to commit to preparing for that meeting? And what time do I need to prepare for what are the next actions and the follow-ups are for that commitment?
And right
there.
So preparation time. Transition time.
Yes, you can start.
Travel time.
Yeah, all of those things. You can see, wow, this one meeting suddenly turns into 3 hours. Even though it was only blocked off for one, because of transition, because of transportation problem needs and preparation needs and follow-up needs, suddenly you're like, wow, that one thing took half a day.
Right. I know people who leave for their 3 o'clock meetings on the other side of town at 3 o'clock.
Yes.
It's not a problem for them. It's a problem for you if you're in the meeting, but they operate as if this is normal.
That's a phenomenon I discovered when I was in Chicago, because getting across town in that town is such a challenge that you can't do that. if you leave for your 3 o'clock at 3 o'clock, you'll end up there at 7. So.
So there's an easy basic to start with, and as the world starts to evolve to you, you start to get into that kind of practice.
Yes.
Which essentially means that you're starting to take your mental calendar and you're putting it into your literal calendar.
Yes, and I think that this is where I recently read the updated version of Getting Things Done.
Uh-huh.
And because I wanted to see if our...
Everything had changed.
Yeah, which is to say, are my views on calendars still as divergent as they once were with Getting Things Done? And I can confidently say, yes, they are.
they are the opposite.
Yes. Because they're Getting Things Done seems to still advocate for those things, the blocking those things on your calendar are appointments,
right? And with other people or things that have to be at a particular time and place.
Yes,
even though that's not really defined in the book, is it?
Right,
it's just stated.
Yes, and. And that you do your work in between those things,
right? Which for someone who has a low number of commitments,
mm-hmm.
is not a problem.
Correct.
But for the other guy, for the vice president or the manager or even the professional who is really sharp, the fact is, there's no such thing as free time in their world, is it?
Exactly. There's always something. It's more about,
Yes. Is
the thing that I'm spending energy on at this moment the most appropriate thing I should be spending energy on?
Right. So when I use the software and I look at your calendar, Garrick, what am I really looking at?
When you look at my calendar?
Yeah. I don't know, if I were your colleague in the company.
Oh, yes.
And I looked at your calendar. Yes. And I'm looking for free time.
Oh.
And I don't see any.
Yeah. Because it would be really challenging for you to see free time on my calendar less than a week out. Because so every week I block off my commitments almost 2 weeks out. So
I'm rude, right? And I say to you, well, you're available next week.
Right.
There's nothing there.
Yeah.
And I actually book out a nice 4-hour slot in your calendar for next week. What then?
Right after I'm resuscitated from the heart attack, I'll probably send you an email with
Garrick,
a question mark in it.
It's free time. It's free time, isn't it?
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, no, right? It's all opportunity cost, right? It's all... And... there's always
free time, though.
There's always, we just don't know what it is. And so, okay, this is why the whole reason I brought up getting things done is the thing that I am a huge advocate over is getting all of those things out of your head.
Yes.
Get all of those commitments and things you should do and all of those ideas out. Get it out and write it down. I just did this morning, in fact.
Yeah.
I took an hour and just did that sweep that they talk about of getting everything through your head, go through your email, go through your calendar, all it back and forth, and like just and then write down all the things.
Yes.
And then the next thing I did was rank them in terms of from today, from this morning, right now, 1 to 10, what are the most in terms of significance, in terms of urgency, in terms of desirability,
right?
And then I open my calendar and put every single one of them in the calendar.
And why isn't there anything for next week? Is just because you didn't schedule next week doesn't mean that next week you're on vacation, does it?
No, it does not. No, because if I was on vacation, that would be obvious to you. It would be blocked off already.
I couldn't get that time. See, what struck me as you were saying this is that there for the committed professional at a particular level, there is no such thing as free time.
Absolutely.
There's only opportunity cost.
Yes.
And
yes.
Just because there is... My calendar isn't robust enough to schedule. So I use SchedPal, which automatically schedules me 2 weeks out.
Nice.
Which, of course, but not 3 weeks. So you could put anything you want 3 weeks out. But all that means is that the software doesn't go into the third week because it had to create some kind of limit because it would have killed the resources of the program. It runs too slowly. So they had to put in a cutoff just for logical reasons.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't mean that week is any less important than this week.
No.
So the putting yourself in my calendar in 3 weeks' time is making a request for then does not mean that I am freer than I am now, or I will be willing to put your meeting at a high priority.
Correct.
Just because it's the first item in my digital display.
Yes. It
actually doesn't mean anything, I think.
No. No, it doesn't, and it maybe we should have, like, depending on what the thing is that you want to talk about, maybe we should talk about it right now, rather than 3 weeks from now, or maybe I'm the wrong person altogether, and we should never have this conversation.
Or maybe the conversation has such little value that it shouldn't be held at all.
Yes.
Send me an email.
Yes, and we should... probably determine if it's the right use of anybody's time to have that commitment on the calendar. Yeah.
It forces that kind of question to be asked. If you're willing to say no,
mm-hmm.
as you are by basically filling up your calendar, you're forcing the person who wants to look for extra free time in your calendar to contend with your priorities.
Yes.
It's just the right thing to do.
I totally agree. Yeah. Sell yourself.
Sell yourself.
Yeah. Convince me that your thing is a higher priority than these things I've been preparing for, these things I've already committed to. Like, all, and maybe they are, and that would be awesome. That would be amazing. Probably
so
not.
You're
though.
Saying Outlook should have a field that says why this meeting is a priority.
And that
that's essentially what.
Yes, that could be
it, right?
Yeah. Just give me one sentence on why this over the things I've already am moving forward.
Yeah, that's awesome. that's a solid. Actually, any of the features that you sort of mentioned, the why, the
right.
The, we talked about the reason for the meeting, the
yeah.
who's going to be there, the agenda. Any of those elements that make up, that are critical to a good meeting,
mm-hmm.
if all Outlook did was to require that they be, and even answer the question, why is this 1 hour as opposed to 45 minutes?
Yes.
Can it be 45
what's
minutes?
What's fun is
how can you take off 5 minutes?
Outlook throws an error if you try and send a meeting request without a location. But it doesn't throw an error if you try to send a meeting request without a justification.
Isn't that... Maybe that's how they do it at Microsoft. it's their culture that's at play. They wrote their culture into the software.
Oh, absolutely. There's a rule, I forget what it's called, a law in the Wikipedias. One of those laws, Eponymous laws, named after a person. The law is that all software is a reflection of the team that built it.
There you go.
Yeah.
There you go. That makes perfect sense because they could easily put these options in.
Yes.
It would give the user a better idea of what you're trying to do.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing they could do is to account for people like you and I who schedule our commitments into our calendar,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
They could do a million things to make it easier for us to actually do it.
Right.
And come off of the bandwagon of it's only for appointments and make solo appointments this foreign, this weird thing that... but they could actually allow us to schedule different levels or priorities
right.
in our time.
Yes.
So we could say, okay, my 2 hours on Monday, I guess, mm-hmm. like you said, mm-hmm. are from 10 to 12, are holy and cannot be touched
mm-hmm.
and will only be changed in an emergency.
Right.
So when someone's looking to make a meeting request, they don't make a meeting request about that time
mm-hmm.
because they can see that that's let's call it Garrick's red hot time. They can't schedule it on top of an already existing meeting. Although they might, because you may indicate that this meeting is a priority 2 and their meeting is a priority 1.
Yes.
So they may make the request. But between the appointments and your red hot
mm-hmm.
time on Monday morning, there should be time in the calendar for them to cherry pick sort of times that would make sense given your commitments. In other words, see a landscape of your commitments spread out over the week.
Yeah, absolutely. And one of the things that brings to mind is this notion of deliberately baking in some slack, some white mm-hmm. space, some... Mm-hmm. Some
consciously,
yes, knowing that,
right.
And I think I'm mm-hmm. currently of the opinion that the best way to do that is to start with commitments that that start 30 minutes apart.
Yes,
and is build out your week with commitments that are 30 minutes apart, and then adjust them.
Slide them around
to be able to say, okay, I can take this I can take advantage of this opportunity that's been presented to me that I didn't anticipate, and I can do so by moving these other commitments around and making the white space for this new opportunity.
Yeah. Because what you're doing is you're sort of sending a signal that it's not completely clear time.
Mm-hmm.
But the best signal you know to send, given the limitations of the software,
right,
is to show that there are half-hour slots, and you encourage someone to take a half-hour slot,
yeah,
or to bargain for the combination of two halves into one.
Yes, or give me something. Right? Give me something so attractive that I will move all these things. These things are malleable.
Right.
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 Give me a reason to accommodate you. I can do so. Right. And plus
couldn't that be? Go ahead.
Go ahead. Couldn't that be?
Sorry, I was just going to suggest. Couldn't that be also built into the software?
Oh yeah.
Couldn't you set a default?
Yeah.
That says everything has a half an hour buffer.
Yes.
The way you were describing before.
Yes. And Outlook.
Easy design decision, right, for Microsoft to make.
Right. Currently, it says when you get in some meeting request, it will say this meeting request would. What's the phrasing he uses? Is right next to another commitment. And why is 0 minutes difference the threshold for a notification? If I was just able to set that.
Zero. Yeah, why is zero? That makes no sense. That means you are making a mistake.
Yes.
By following the software.
Yes.
It intentionally causes a breakdown.
Yes. Where if it was 20 minutes or 30 minutes, like this, if you say yes to this, it's within 30 minutes of your next commitment. Oh. Okay. Right? That's much more valuable to me than like it ends when another one starts. Like, no.
It's impossible.
It's impossible.
Unless you're in the same room and it's the same people and it's just an agenda item.
Yeah, and or if they're all coming to you, yeah, then that's fine. But I have transition time.
But even then, you have to get the people out of the room who are in the meeting
mm-hmm.
beforehand.
Yeah,
you can't get them out in zero time.
You can't. It's
unless you can. You tell me.
We haven't solved that physics problem yet.
That one hasn't been resolved. But again, these strike me as sort of easy to implement features. If the engineers of Microsoft, if the software designers had the right philosophy.
Yes, and these are characteristics of things that either they have, and which means there's enough of an expression of these things in the software today that it might just be a configuration issue. Or they are things that exist in other software, other calendars. I can set travel time. Other calendars will, check the transition time, the distance between two points at that time, and
physical distance,
and recommend mm-hmm. a mm-hmm. Travel time between them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And they would be inserting a level of realism
yes.
into your calendar that is necessary to be able to use your calendar, even to follow the meetings, but let alone follow the meetings, to actually follow it so that you're executing it faithfully.
I really like that you use the word realistic there. It does a nice job of, I think, articulating, well, what's the opposite of the opposite of realistic is fantasy. So we are living in this fantasy calendaring
fantasy
world right now that software is reinforcing.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
one
mm-hmm.
of the things that I discovered when I started being more deliberate with my calendar usage was this notion of what is realistically possible today.
Mm-hmm.
What kind of time do I actually have? And when you subtract transition times, and when you factor in lunches and transport and all of those things,
mm-hmm.
it's the amount of time you actually have to do anything is surprisingly scarce. And
yes.
I don't think our tools
precious.
Yes, precious. Our tools don't do a good job of reminding us how little time we actually have during the day.
Right. I take lunch around 1:30 each day.
Mm-hmm.
And between 1:30 and 3:30, I am absolutely useless.
Yes.
And it's not because of lunch. It's not a siesta. It's that I start early, usually. I start about 5.
Mm-hmm.
And I tend to go full speed ahead until about 1 or so.
Yeah.
One coffee and some breakfast.
Well, by my calculation, your day is done by that point. I mean, if you are going full speed for that duration and that time,
full speed,
you should just say, see you tomorrow. But
yeah, no, if the software could even give an inkling as to what I'm doing and what I'm trying to do, and respond accordingly, because it has all the information. It knows what a human being is capable of.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
There are some rules of thumb, like the one that says you have the two meetings back to back.
Yes.
That's at least a little bit of smarts that was introduced. it could determine I've worked X number of hours
mm-hmm.
per day.
Mm-hmm.
And when I try to schedule something in, say, are you sure you've already worked X number of hours per day?
Right, yeah. Are you sure?
It could make those AI kind of machine learning kind of suggestions, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Like your day is pretty packed with some high-intensity things. Perhaps push this other high-intensity thing to tomorrow. Yeah.
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 And make a smart suggestion.
So one of the sort of framework that I've adapted, that's worked really well for me, is this notion of estimating duration of an activity.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think I wrote a blog post about this a while ago. To describe it shortly, it's to say, if the activity is small and I know how to do it, it's 30 minutes. If it's big and I know how to do it, it's 60 minutes. If it's big and I don't know how to do it, it's 90 minutes.
That's your 30, 60, 90 blog post. I read that. We should put it in the show notes.
Yeah, that'd be great.
I'll put a note here.
Thanks. And because I found that after 90 minutes, I need to step away from whatever I'm doing anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And just regroup and rethink about it and get some refreshments and come back with it fresh eyes. And it could just mm-hmm. be 10 or 15 mm-hmm. minutes, but it's enough to say, okay, I've worked with this problem for 90 minutes and I haven't solved it. Or what is, I think, more delightful is that time where you're like, I gave 90 minutes of this and I've solved it and I've come to a stopping point and it took exactly 89 and a half minutes. There's the theory of expanding time works really mm-hmm. well in the opposite direction.
Right.
Say, I've only got this amount of time to accomplish this thing.
You accomplish it.
Look at that.
You will accomplish a semester of learning in a semester.
Yes, you will. And that's one of the my reluctance to adopt my reluctance to recommend a not using your calendar for your work, and to only use it for commitments is to say the theory of expanding time means you will just continue to work on that with no pressure to conclude.
Mm-hmm. Which is unrealistic.
Yes. Yes,
because there is always pressure to conclude.
You're gonna need to stop for lunch at some point.
I've heard of artists who would work for 2 days straight,
mm-hmm.
and just collapse at the end of the 2 days and have a masterpiece at the end of it. Hopefully,
yes. And as soon as
there is a limit.
As soon as they're in a condition to revisit and appreciate it.
Right. If they could even stomach it at
yes.
that point, because they'd have had two days of complete immersion and sort of a mania.
Yes.
To get the product out.
Anyway.
But it strikes me that one of the assumptions, a few assumptions Microsoft has made. So they've made assumptions about how the working professional who uses their software sees their time.
Mm-hmm.
And the assumption is that they use their calendar as an appointment calendar,
yes.
and they have a mental calendar of everything else.
Yes.
And that even if they have a to-do list somewhere, they're juggling a mental calendar, which is why I resonate with what you said before, that laying out your calendar is a very different thing than keeping the items in a list.
Yes. Yes.
And for small numbers of items, one of the things I've researched is that it's fine if you have a small number of items, you can get by with it, which is where getting things done is geared.
Mm-hmm.
But if you have items that, so many items that they compete for free time mm-hmm. aggressively, then you must schedule your item, your commitments in a calendar in order to escape the overwhelm of trying to keep this mental calendar.
Oh, when I started to put all of my commitments in my calendar, I was surprised at how much lighter my brain felt.
Mm-hmm.
It
is hard.
Yes.
It's not impossible.
Because if you
to
keep
juggle.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead. No.
Oh, prior to that, I felt like whenever I was working on something, I was supposed to be working on something else.
Yes.
And as soon as I said no, that second thing is scheduled for tomorrow.
Yes.
I could focus
your mind
on the
allows
first thing.
You to focus.
Yes.
Right. Now, getting things done doesn't address that. It's a variation of the Zygarnik effect. the nagging, pinging feeling of when something isn't finished.
Mm, mm-hmm.
Getting things done doesn't address that at all, and it actually advocates the keeping of a mental calendar and the expenditure of mental energy to rejuggle items in your calendar.
Right.
In your mental calendar when things change, which is much harder to do than juggling a digital calendar.
Completely agree.
Things change.
Absolutely.
But it doesn't address that. But Microsoft is in that school of thought, the same school of thought. They assume that everyone is the same, that everyone is using their calendar in the same way, which is to manage their hard landscape of appointments, right?
Mm-hmm. And that landscape is defined as a commitment at a time and place with another individual.
Right, mm-hmm. right. So their assumption is that. So their assumption is that the person who is setting the meeting is working with other people who are of like practice.
Yes.
And you and I know that we're not the only two people in the planet who are doing this. That there's a ton of other people who, when you look at their calendar and try to schedule anything for the foreseeable future,
mm-hmm.
it's totally blocked.
Yes.
And for someone who belongs to that school of thought, that doesn't make sense. How can everything, they can't be in meetings all the time. Well, they're not. They've scheduled personal time
right.
away from you and your meeting.
Well, I've had those conversations. I've had those conversations with people who are like, why are you so calm? And like, when do you get your work done? I said, I get my work done, like, scheduled, like right, like, coming up. Like, I have 2 hours to actually work on this thing. And they're like, oh. Like,
rocket science.
It's an epiphany to say that you can block off time on your calendar to work on something. And, to be
rocket
honest,
science
for some. It is an epiphany to do that.
If you've read some books like Getting Things Done, listen to other mm-hmm. time management gurus, they would tell you not to do it.
Yes.
They would explicitly say, bad idea, slippery slope, won't scale, and there are no practices or software that will ever deliver you to the promised land. Don't even go there.
And
instead, keep it in your head.
Yes.
Keep it in your head, Garrick. You can keep it in your head.
I do sometimes have a big head. I am reminded of Arnold Schwarzenegger's, what I've heard of Arnold Schwarzenegger's time management practices.
Oh, tell me.
Which is, pick a hard, audacious, long-term goal and don't do anything else. So, on a practical level, how this ties back to our stuff is I've heard of when he was governor that he didn't keep a appointment book. He didn't keep a calendar. And that If he was available when you showed up, he was available when you showed up.
Well.
Right.
No, I imagine, though, he had an army of administrative assistants.
Oh, for sure. That were constantly, yeah, constantly, like, keeping him protected, for sure. Absolutely. And I think, you know, if you... That is a totally valid way to operate, by right. which I mean completely say, this is like people who say, I don't have a Facebook account, or I'm not on Twitter. Like, I refuse to engage with Outlook because...
Right,
because I know that it won't lead me to my long-term goal, and it may be it doesn't allow me to capture opportunity as aggressively as I need to, and that could all be true. And if that's the angle that that the people who are advocating for only appointments in your calendar are, like, cool, but the world I live in
but
is
that's not the
yeah
that's not the case. If it were.
Yeah.
It actually would take us to our fourth point, or third point had to do with software and design specs.
Mm-hmm.
So we've now gotten to the point where we're rejecting the software.
Yes, exactly.
Revoking.
There's no redeeming qualities of you at all. Go away. Yes.
So you can absolutely get by. I am reminded of Jeb Bartlett, the former president of the United States, according to Hollywood.
Ah.
Who was on the West, you know, the TV show, The West Wing.
Yes.
And he would turn to his secretary and say, what's next? And he just moved from one what's next to the next.
Mm-hmm.
So he never put his hand on his calendar other than to make adjustments through her.
Right.
Because she would be his conductor.
Yes.
And she would tell him what's coming up, what's the rest of the day. She'd tell him when to switch. She'd tell him 5 minutes to the meeting with the King of Prussia.
Right, and whatever. And here's what it's about, and here's the concerns, and here's the angle that we...
Yeah.
All of that prep and context that you need and that can be delivered as you're moving to the space where that conversation is going to happen. Outlook
right.
is the worst... Not Outlook is the worst.
Google Calendar is right up there.
If Google Calendar and Outlook and Apple Calendar behaved like that secretary?
Yeah.
That would be amazing. To be able to give her all of that context that I need to feel prepared and be prepared as I'm walking into the meeting. That's what I want. I'm in a position where to feel prepared, I need that transition time.
So one of the interventions you'd make in a badly performing company, mm-hmm. so a company that is at the bottom of the spectrum that we described, would be to train admin assistants. So that would be one of your first, one of the first possible remedies.
Interesting.
And then, actually, the McKinsey article said the same thing, mm-hmm. that there's a higher correlation between productivity at the executive level and the presence of qualified administrative assistance.
Absolutely. I've seen some
research, right? And we've all seen the Jeb Bartlett example where someone strong makes the meetings start and end on time.
Yes.
And it's not the protagonist, but it's his assistant who does it.
Yes.
So one level of training is to train that person. But most of us don't have access to that person.
Correct.
So I'm imagining that you would train the individual to play that role for him or herself.
Mm-hmm.
Yes?
Mm-hmm. Yes, and I think that's to some degree what my, you know, hour on Friday afternoons is for myself, is to go through my upcoming commitments and my upcoming calendars, mm-hmm. and have a level of confidence that they're the right things at the right time in the right place, and that I've got that context ready, and I've got that transition time ready, and if you don't have a person to do that for you, you're going to need to block off the time to do that for you, for yourself, and so that becomes another recurring commitment is just in terms of this being prepared for what's coming next, and I found it to work best on Friday afternoons. For a while, I was doing Sunday nights, but I decided that this is a professional thing, and therefore needs to fall on professional hours,
not personal.
Exactly,
time away from your family.
Yes,
right. That's a great principle. It makes perfect sense. No, I can get. I can in a training day. I can get people who are in my training programs to agree to everything that we've said so far.
Right.
Because it makes perfect sense to them that there really is not an alternative, a logical alternative to what we've said so far. But here's the part where they tell me they have the hardest part. So I usually am left not training the executives. So I train everyone else below that level, maybe, or senior management, junior management, and professionals, right?
Okay.
So they look me in the eye every time and say, they need to be here.
The executives, yeah.
Yeah, and they have a great point. And they also say, you'll never get them here.
They're too busy.
And they're, yes, exactly right. It's true. It is true across the board.
Right.
One or two exceptions, right? So I'm stuck as to what to, I've been stuck as to what to tell them.
Right.
So I say, what, and I, usually this is the last 5 minutes of the program, so it's not a serious conversation, but maybe we can share some notes about what kind of interventions would we launch if given the opportunity to come into a company that realizes they may have a problem, but they actually have a big problem. Where would we start if getting everyone in the company in a training program were not an option, or it would just take too long?
Yeah, and
what could you put in place to intervene?
One of the things,
and it's not software.
No, so not, no, not, right. It's got
no new version of Outlook that's enlightened. No,
right,
off the table.
You know, there is a long history of corporations and companies having things like our values and our whatever, like
mission,
right, our mission. Yes, all of those things that start to structure direction and culture. So my first thought would be to say, is there a thing within our values, is there a thing within how we operate or our principles or whatever that thing is that this could be attached to? Or is this another thing, right? Because if the executives are not going to be in the training, then it needs to be tied to some other cultural thing that they've agreed upon. And so you can so when there is a conflict with how to behave, you can go back to those documents and say, we said we were going to be better about X. This is that. Are we serious? And if we are, then what does better about X mean? If you've called these meetings with 12 people and we said we were going to behave differently about these kinds of commitments, how are we going to change? What is the right direction? And so it's, I'm a big fan of...
But it's a tie that's hard to make, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
The connection. Because, for example, I've countless companies say they're, oh yeah, work-life balance, oh yeah.
Yes.
However... We gave you that smartphone for a reason.
This is
one HR professional put it to me, a manager said to me, you know, we give smartphones for a reason, and there's an unspoken agreement or understanding that you're available 24/7, essentially, is what she said.
Right. And the inverse is, or there's the conflict that I experienced forever ago, now 18 years ago now, was I was at a job at an employer, and they issued me a smartphone and a laptop, and then wanted me to be in the office every day, which
at the total opposite.
Yeah, it's like
behavior.
Wait,
from
why are you expecting me to be in the office every day when you gave me stuff that's totally portable? That like okay.
Because we believe in work-life balance.
Right.
What? <yeah. laughs> Oh, you mean weekend work?
Yeah.
Oh, vacation work.
Yes,
oh,
and so
sick day work.
You know, the one
early
thing.
Early morning, late nights. holidays.
They're all fair game. I don't want to completely bash Outlook. It does have, I don't remember if it had this when I was using it more long ago and far away, but it does now have a thing where you can declare working hours. I think it may use that phrase, I'm not sure, but it uses, and so it is one small signal to your colleagues to say, if you are looking to make a commitment to me that I will more likely say yes to, it needs to be within these bounds.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. At least a red flag goes up that if, and you could actually, in the best of software, well, they actually have done this. So Puma, Adidas,
mm-hmm.
German companies,
mm-hmm.
and another one I can't remember, actually turn off their email servers
yes.
at night.
Yes.
So they've the software models the values.
Yes.
Now, I don't know of any U.S. company that's that brave yet, because it's a bona fide, unambiguous statement.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So around meetings, you could do some of the same things that we've talked about in software.
Mm-hmm.
You could do it in training when someone joins a company, they could be told, meetings are a waste of time and need to or can be a terrible waste of time and need to be sparingly
mm-hmm.
employed.
Yes, and here are the things you will see your colleagues do that reflect that principle.
The behaviors.
Yes, exactly.
That go with it.
Exactly.
I actually have an idea that I came up with. I don't know if I came up with it, but I know I wrote something on it. I'll put it in the show notes. And it has to do with email and meetings, because the sort of conclusion I had was that they're both terrible time sucks.
Mm-hmm.
So why not give people a certain number of credits?
Yes, make them more expensive.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And when you call a meeting, depending on who you call and how long the meeting is for, you use up your credits.
Mm-hmm.
And when you use up too many credits, and you can also, you should also give feedback at the end of a meeting. And if you get below a certain threshold, like you only get score a 2 out of 5 in terms of the meeting feedback and the meeting quality,
right.
You lose even more credits.
Yes.
So when your credits run out at the middle of the month, and you have to go to your boss, and the software won't allow you to call another meeting because you run out of credits.
Oh my goodness, that's delightful. That is
a great conversation to have.
Delightful.
Same goes for email.
Mm-hmm.
You can't send another email because you're the guy who copies to everyone, CCs everyone in the company.
And
sends out nonsense email and noise, as this company put it.
There's a credit expense. There's a credit deducted for each other person that you pull into this. Yeah. Oh, that's funny. That sort of reminds me of the time.
Every added person
takes
out some credits.
It reminds me of the time in some systems, Outlook systems I worked with, the conference rooms, to include them, you need to include them as a recipient. To reserve the conference room, you need to include the conference room as a recipient on the...
Oh, yeah.
Right? And I remember
one
time I had sort of done that retroactively.
Yes.
And moments later, I got a declined notice from the conference room I was sitting in.
You are not in this conference room at this time.
Conference room has refused your meeting. Go away. Conference rooms can do it.
And that's the beginning of a little bit of accountability, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Just a smidgen. So at least you can't claim that you're in a space retroactively that the system doesn't believe you could have been in.
Yes, exactly. No, I'd like...
So it's at least a bit, you know, we need so much more of it, because even if Outlook, so forget about Outlook mm-hmm. for a minute, because I'm not optimistic that the features that we're talking about are going to show up anytime soon. I don't think our philosophy is going to infect the designers at Microsoft.
Mm-hmm.
However, you could give everyone a credit sheet.
Right.
And say every meeting you call, mm-hmm. you fill out one of these sheets, you and do it by hand. Mm-hmm. Who cares?
Mm-hmm.
Or Excel spreadsheet, whatever. But at the end of the month, wherever, there's an accounting. And your boss gets a report. I think you should get an email report, which could be system-generated, but you could also get a hand-generated meeting report. Mm-hmm. And here's the amount of time I spend in meetings. Here's the number of people that were there, which has a correlation with the quality of the meeting.
Yeah, and the cost,
how long it went for. Here's the total cost of each meeting that I called. And you measure the whole, and here's the feedback I got for each one. And there's a report. And that, even if you don't change Outlook mm-hmm. and the calling of meetings, I think that could help to modify a whole bunch of behavior.
That's a very interesting idea. To put some notion of currency against these kinds of things, because time is a resource, and unlike other resources, it's non-renewable.
Right. So it would, because you talked about us negotiating times mm-hmm. for these meetings, mm-hmm. and how difficult it is to do. Negotiation, unfortunately, happens for the most part sort of just verbally, and there's no accounting for good decisions or bad decisions.
Mm-hmm.
Some kind of credit system seems like it would bring some realism, because you're left with the feeling anyway that this is a waste of time and that person wastes my time.
Yes.
And I'm going to avoid his meeting. So you're effectually discounting his ability to call meetings. You're just not telling him, and it's not being reflected in a numeric or a quantitative way.
Well,
right?
Yeah, and then you would. I love this idea. There is nothing more I love more than this idea of engineers taking something that is vague and emotional and quantifying it. It's the.
I pay credit for my phone calls.
Yes.
When I'm using a prepaid system.
Absolutely.
So,
well, and we were in
heck.
In those. Yeah, and that wasn't that long ago when mobile phone calls were terribly expensive, and so when someone connected, it was valuable. It was important message to have, and now we are texting each other emojis. So there is this notion that if something is low cost, there will be more of it. So how do we? I think what we're talking about is how do we increase
the
visibility of the cost. Absolutely, yeah. Very interesting.
Yes,
very interesting.
So when you call a meeting, on my calendar, if I give you 2 hours in my calendar,
mm-hmm.
it's Thursday and you're calling for a meeting on Friday.
Mm-hmm.
You should pay.
It's like how airplane tickets cost more the closer to the departure.
Yeah, it's just like that.
Just like that.
And it's not, I don't think I'm talking about something expensive, because you could do it on paper.
Yeah.
If you really wanted to, or just a spreadsheet.
Mm-hmm.
But I hope there was a software developer listening who could, and it's probably already an idea that's already out there. It's just that the hard part is to get back to the system, is that you'd have to somehow marry it with Outlook, have it as a plugin or as something, because it can't be something way over here on some website,
right?
Like an extra step.
Yes, agreed.
It needs to be woven into your Outlook meeting requests.
Yeah, interesting. I am delighted that that's where we landed in this conversation. How much fun is that?
I'm thinking somebody at Outlook who you can immediately call. Look out! Who you can immediately call. I don't know anyone,
Call them up.
I'm,
say,
I'm no one.
You need to build this plugin. We need to be able to quantify the cost of these things.
Right.
Very good.
Right. But it's a good point for us to reach the top of our hour and say I'll put in a summary. I'll listen to our time together. I'll put in a summary at the end. But is this a good time to close us out? Do you have any parting shots for Microsoft or listeners?
No, I think
software designers.
This was a very delightful and engaging and thought-provoking conversation. As with all conversations like this, when you pick a topic and you just allow the conversation to guide you, you don't know where you're going to land. And I didn't know this is where we were going to land, and I think it's super fun.
I enjoyed the time with you also. if you have another topic in mind, you just let me know, because let's take a crack at it any point in the future, because it's been great having you on the show, and it's great having someone on who has thought about the problem and twisted and turned it up and down and has a philosophy and is willing to stand for the principles that aren't exactly the popular ones.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for inviting me. It's been a delightful time to just chat and focus together. So on the problem together. You have a great rest of your day, and we'll connect soon.
Thanks for listening to Live Loud Number 4, episode number 63 with Garrick Van Buren. The interactive can be found in the show notes. Just click on the link and it'll take you straight into it. If you'd like to support the work we're doing, simply click on the Patreon link below to make a donation. Don't forget to like our show on iTunes, Stitcher, Google, or whatever podcast app you happen to use. This is Francis Wade signing out, the Tube Time Labs podcast. Until next time.